Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Words of the Wise podcast, hosted by me, Lexi Maynard. Our mission is to capture the words and wisdom of the world's elderly so that their story and legacy may last forever. Like what we're about? Then be sure to subscribe to receive instant updates on new episodes. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Words of the Wise Podcast, or on Twitter at Words of W Podcast as well. Joining us today for episode number 20, we have Ellie Mallory. As Ellie has lived in various places throughout her life, this episode is full of interesting stories and insight. Hope you enjoy listening to this interview as much as I enjoyed conducting it. Here is episode 20, Ellie Mallory.
Hi, I'm Ellie, and I'm 84 years old.
All right, and can we start by talking about your parents? Am I correct that they had immigrated to the States from Scotland? Your parents did? That's
correct, but not at the same time. Oh. My mother came when she was 2 with her family, and my father came with his family when I think he was 17.
Oh, wow. And how did they meet then?
They met at my father's sister and my mother's brother's wedding.
Oh, wow.
So, consequently, I have a double cousin.
Oh my gosh, that's fun though.
We have the same grandparents.
And how would you say knowing your heritage / genealogy has shaped you?
I think it's important to know what your background is. And I think that could be the reason so many adopted children really yearn to know who they came from. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. But I think it helps to know who your parents, grandparents, great-grandparents were and what they did, and maybe to appreciate what they did. They took a lot of big steps, and in my generation and your generation enjoys their courage.
Mm-hmm. And so since they both did immigrate from Scotland, how did that affect your childhood? Like, did you do a lot of traditional Scottish things as a kid, or like, what was that like?
Probably, but I didn't know it was particularly Scottish because we all lived in the same area. I had 22 cousins and all those aunts and uncles. And so I couldn't do anything wrong because somebody would see me. In fact, I even had a cousin who was in the same classroom as I was.
Really?
So we had a deal.
So you grew up in Connecticut.
Yes.
And how long did you live there for?
Until we moved when I was in the 6th grade. So I had a wonderful childhood there with all that family around. I never knew a stranger, you know. Everybody knew everybody. Lived across the street from a huge forest reserve. And back then, kids kind of had open field. You could do whatever, just be home. When you hear a whistle blow, it's supper time.
Yeah.
Make sure you're home, you know. And so we all played in the woods. We had a big lake. And we'd wait till it froze over, and we'd ice skate, and we swam in the summer there. And one thing I think now how dangerous it was, but there was a railroad track that went by that preserve, and hobos would jump on and off.
Oh,
see, this is around World War II.
Uh huh.
That's how they got around, and we would get up on a hill and look down at their campground, and they would be around a fire, and they'd have potatoes they'd put in the fire and bake their potatoes and eat. I mean, I can't believe we did that now. And, you know, it was probably not the smartest thing we ever did, but we also found that there was a POW camp at the other end of the forest preserve that no one knew about. They were found out later, they were captured Italian officers. that they had in a POW camp in Bristol, Connecticut. Now it's all public knowledge. But we discovered it because we kept seeing the trains stopping and taking stuff somewhere. And one day we decided to go through the woods and see what was going on. We come out of the woods and there's a clearing and there's a big fence with guys inside with POW on their shirts and men walking around the fence with guns. Scared us silly. We thought we were going to get shot. We walked backwards and we're probably 7-8 years old. And we got on the trail to get back and we ran like the wind. I mean, we were terrified. And the four of us told our parents what we had seen. None of the parents believed us. I was a grown woman living in Oxford, Ohio. And one of my aunts sent me a newspaper article revealing that there had been a POW camp in Burgess Pond, that they were Italian immigrants who did not want to go back after the war.
Yeah.
Because it was destroyed. They had nothing to go back to. And so to protect their information, they just kind of assimilated into the society and never told that they were prisoners of war. And so I went, as soon as she sent that, I went and found out they were releasing all, there were prisoner of war camps all over the country. And we didn't ever, no, people just didn't know about it. But that's what, and I also got to see President Roosevelt when he was coming through Bristol, Connecticut, and he was on the back of a train. And it was all, you know, had flags everywhere. And he sat in the back in a chair with blankets over his legs because, you know, he had polio. And he, you know, he did the queen wave, you know, to people on either side of the tracks. And I remember my dad saying, now you can tell that you have seen the president of the United States, you know. And I was just a little kid, but I'll never forget it. So my childhood was a lot of fun.
So when did you move to Ohio and why?
My father was with General Motors and they were opening a new plant in Sandusky, Ohio. And they wanted him to do the design of the inside. And so that's why we went out there. And we went by train, a sleeper car.
How far was that?
From Connecticut to Ohio.
How long did it take you to get there?
I know it was overnight. We got to sleep on the train. It was fun.
So you were an only child. How do you believe this affected you later in life?
I don't know, because I never really thought of myself as an only child, not with 22 cousins who were always around. In fact, one of them lived with us for a while. While his dad was in World War II. And his mom and dad came and stayed with us. And he grew up and became an attorney and has done very well. But no, I just had family all around all the time.
And what would you say is your favorite childhood memory?
Boy, there were a lot of them. Maybe when I was in fifth grade, one of my good friends, Maureen Conley, had a cousin who worked in Washington, D.C. as a secretary to Sam Rayburn. And she invited us to come by train from Bristol, Connecticut, down to Washington, D.C. And I came home and told Mom and Dad that I'd been invited. We were going to go by train, and the cousin was going to pick us up at the station. And my mother said, oh, there's no way you two young girls can go on the train. And I'll never forget, my father said, Peggy, Eleanor is very capable of doing that. And, you know, it was a good lesson because it was kind of my protective mother and my liberating father, you know, who just said, and we went. We had a wonderful time because she was an employee. We got in places other people, you know, weren't getting into.
Yeah.
And we just had a ball. But I did notice when we got on the train that my father slipped the porter a few dollars. And I think it was to kind of keep an eye on those two little girls, probably was. And the other thing I remember, we had dinner on the train, and we had fried chicken. And one of my aunts said, now, Eleanor, when you get on the train and have dinner, they're going to bring a bowl of hot water with a lemon in it. It is not soup. It is a finger bowl. And sure enough, we had fried chicken, and they came with the finger bowls. Yeah. And Maureen looked at it, and she said, what did we order? And I very knowingly said, it's a finger bowl, and it's to wash her hands. She said, how did you know that?
Oh, that's funny. So then, once you were older, what did the typical Saturday night in high school look like for you?
High school. Saturday night, usually a football game or a basketball game or parties in the summer, because it was on Lake Erie. Mm-hmm. We'd have beach parties, and some people lived on the beach, you know, or off right off the beach, and so we would have those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. It was very nice, even though I didn't really go to the football games or basketball games. I was there, but I was a class officer, and we sold cider and donuts. Oh. And so that's what I did. So, and I wasn't interested in football.
Did you have a job growing up?
Oh, yes. I babysat a lot. Mm-hmm. In fact, my big babysitting job was Saturdays. I worked for a woman who left 8 in the morning and probably got back at 8 at night. And there were three children. And so I was very busy on Saturdays with them. And then in high school, I worked in a ladies' clothing shop. And that was very educational and helpful. And then I also worked three noons a week at the Rieger Hotel, serving Lions Exchange and Rotary Clubs, and made $2.75, got my lunch, plus tips. Oh. And the store owner, the lady shop, the store owner would say, if it takes you an hour and a half, that's all right. Oh. And so I did well. And then I developed my own little business of working dinner parties. I would handle the kitchen. And so that when the party was over, the woman didn't have dishes and a mess in the kitchen. I cleaned up the kitchen and I served and took care of all the kitchen stuff. It was pretty good business. I made, because the husband's always paid and they always gave me a beautiful tip.
Yeah. What made you start that business? Just thought of
one. It was one of the, he was a bank president, and they did a lot of entertaining. And his wife just was fed up with the mess, you know, that she had. And he asked me if I would be willing to do it. And from there, it just grew. So it was a good little side thing.
Yeah. So then, as we've been talking about kind of your childhood and your younger years, what would you say is the greatest thing that your parents taught you?
You know, that's difficult. I think independence was one thing. And of course, right from wrong. I grew up in the church. We all did. And so, you know, it was, you know, you be good. you do the right thing. You know right from wrong, and you do good. And I think, and being frugal, which they were. But they, you know, parents teach so much that they don't even know they're teaching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then when it came time for you to make a college decision, you went to Miami of Ohio. Why did you choose to attend college there?
Originally, I was going to go back east to college, just because I was comfortable. I looked at a couple other schools in Ohio, And then a fellow by the name of Bill Mallory invited me to come to homecoming at Miami. And it's a beautiful campus. Mm-hmm. I had some older friends who were students there, and one of them was majoring in what I wanted to major, and talked to her, and she was very happy with the department. And I thought, well, this is, you know, be closer to home. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't as expensive as the schools I was looking at. And I thought, this is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And what was your major?
Music education is what I ended up doing. But I was a music major.
Okay. And had you always been interested in music, or what did you choose that major?
Oh, yeah. I started piano lessons, I think, when I was 7, and organ and voice, and had always been involved with music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And do any particular, what are your favorite college memories?
I think there were so many. One of them was the sorority. I really enjoyed my sorority and the different things we did. And,
mm-hmm. What sorority were you in?
Pi Phi.
Oh, I'm a Pi Phi.
Are you really?
Yeah. That's so funny.
Oh, that's great. Well, I guess I didn't write it down.
That's okay.
But I enjoyed that. I enjoyed my music. There was an opera singer who came, and I got to be her hostess while she was there, and present her flowers at the concert, and introduce her to all the dignitaries at the reception afterwards. That was, her name was Roberta Peters, and she was very famous at that time.
Yeah.
So that was a good memory. As I said, the sorority, and I was active in dorm life. I was a counselor and a house chairman, and lots of good memories.
Oh, yeah.
One of the other good memories was the pinning ceremony. I don't know if colleges still do that.
For the sorority?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not that one. The getting pinned by your boyfriend.
Oh, I've heard of that. But colleges.
The fraternity would come after hours. Now, this is something you probably don't know anything about, but women used to have hours. So we were all in the dorm. And you got to wear a formal, and you stood up in this big window, and you held a candle, and the fraternity came, and they sang the pinning songs, and then your pin mate would come forward and either sing or do something. Yeah. And the fellow that was pinned to was named Bill Mallory, and he recited a poem. It was the first time I ever heard him recite a poem. I was shocked. And that was a highlight. Yeah.
What was the poem about? Do you remember?
I don't even remember now. But he recited it. I couldn't believe it.
That's awesome. So Bill Mallory, he was a football player there at the time. What was it like dating an athlete?
Well, I didn't know him as an athlete. And because football was not my thing, you know, it wasn't a big deal. And at rush parties, I didn't know why people were always coming up to me and saying, he just scored a touchdown. And I'm going, what's the big, we're at a rush party. And how so many people knew I was dating him. And, you know, I wasn't tuned into that. And the only time I went to football games in college was when, as a pledge, we had to go and save seats for the upperclassmen.
Oh, yeah.
So I go in, and then I just kind of talk to everybody during the game. Terrible. Terrible.
So when did you finally graduate? What was your graduation year?
1958.
Okay. And what would you tell yourself now as a college student? So if you could kind of go back, or if you could give advice to a college student now, what would it be?
Sleep. Get sleep. that seemed to be the thing I craved the most.
Yeah.
I couldn't get enough sleep. I was in too many organizations and had too many responsibilities. And it was just like, when do you sleep?
That sounds like me.
Yeah, you don't get enough.
No. No. Yeah, I understand that for sure. So, we've kind of already spoken about him, but how did you meet your soon-to-be husband, Bill?
In high school. We went to the same high school. I think I was just a freshman. And I remember I would see these two guys in the hallway, and they both, everyone said they were such nice guys. They both were named Bill. And this one night, Bill Mallory called me. I didn't know which Bill it was.
Oh.
But I knew they were both really nice guys.
Yeah.
And so I said yes, and we would go to the movie. And I was just beside myself. I thought, it's either that one or it's that one. And I guess I won't know till he comes to the door, you know, to get me.
Yeah.
Well, that Friday at Assembly, Bill Mallory got an award. And I went, oh, so when he walked up on stage, I knew which Bill it was.
Oh, that's great. So what was your first date then?
I don't even remember. Oh, we went to the movie. Yeah. We went to the movie with another couple. Yeah.
Yeah. So you were a freshman then, right? You said?
Yes. Yes.
Then did you date all the way until that point? Or?
We did. But dating then was different. Dating meant you went out on Friday, Saturday night, or, you know, things like that. And we were both very busy in high school. So, you know, we didn't see a whole lot of each other. Then he went off to college.
Yeah.
And we dated other people, and, you know, that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our high school friends always said, of all the couples, you know, in high school, you two will never be the ones who get married.
Really?
We had such different interests. You know, we were just, I don't know. They just always said that.
They were wrong. That's funny.
Oh, yeah.
So then when you went to Miami, you obviously started, you were together again. How long did you date then before he proposed?
Well, I don't think he ever proposed. he kept telling me that we were going to get married. We would marry. And he also told me we would have four kids.
Really?
And yeah. And I used to think, right. And, I was, maybe when I went to Miami, I was, 2 months there, and he pinned me. I was dating other guys. He said, enough of this. Oh, dear.
So when did you finally get married then?
5 days after I graduated from Miami.
Really?
He was already in grad school.
Okay.
At that point. And we decided to do it at that point for a number of reasons. One of them was a lot of my family from Connecticut wanted to come to graduation. Mm-hmm. And so we combined the two. Yeah. And we graduated, or I graduated, and then we went back to Sandusky and got married in the Presbyterian Church.
Yeah. So what's your anniversary? What was your wedding date?
June 14th.
And what?
Flag Day.
Oh, okay. So what was your wedding like? Was it a big wedding?
I think you'd probably call it a medium-sized wedding. We, you know, had a lot of bridesmaids and groomsmen and a lot of high school friends, college friends, and family there. And it was really very nice. And then the reception, we had a band and had dancing. It was fun.
Yeah.
It was a fun day.
Yeah. And I know that you said that he kept saying that you two would get married and you didn't really know. How did you finally know that he was like the one, or that you actually were going to get married?
I realized that every guy I dated, I compared to him.
Yeah.
And he always won out.
Oh, that's great. So how many years were you married?
Almost 60 years. Just a few weeks short of 60.
Mm-hmm. And so obviously that's a very long time. So what would you say the key to that successful marriage was? How did it, what made it work?
Well, I can tell you what worked for us, but it might not work for other people. We talked a lot about different things. We were very open with each other and very honest when we disagreed about different things. And we just got along well.
Mm-hmm.
No drama.
Yeah.
No drama.
That's always a good thing.
We trusted each other.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So your children, I hear that you were told that you couldn't have children originally.
Right. Yeah.
So when were you told this?
We did two things before we were married. One was we went and took it because I got kind of concerned when so many people said, "You two are so different. We don't know how you two get along. You know, you're just different." So we went and took a psychological test. And when we went back for the results, the doctor said, "How long have you known each other?" And I said, 8 years. And he said, "And you're still friends?" And we both went, "Whoops, this does not sound good." And he said, "You two are the exact opposites in every trait except one." I said, "Oh, good. What's the one?" He looked at me and he said, "Dominance." And you both went off the chart. So we knew we really did have some differences, and yeah, we're both strong-willed. We're both going to have to give and, you know, that kind of thing. The other thing was I thought I should have a test, you know, and a physical test. And the doctor called me back and he wanted to do another exam. And I went, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And he said, "Well," he said, "you probably are going to have problems getting pregnant. And just keep in mind, there's always adoption, and that would be fine with me, you know, not a problem." But he said, "You have an issue here." And guess what? There was no issue.
Yeah. So how did it feel then when you found out that you were pregnant with your first child?
Over the moon. Over the moon. So we were both so excited.
Yeah,
it was wonderful.
Yeah. And how old were you when you found out you were going to have your first child?
22. She was born when I was 22. Yeah, I was young for college. Yeah. I started school young.
Yeah. So you ended up having four children, obviously. Could you go through their names? And I know you were 22 when your daughter was born, but how old were you when you had your other three?
When Mike was born, I was 26. When Doug was born, I was 28. And then Kurt was born 33.
Oh.
And I thought I was an older mother. 33. And when I went when the other three were born, the maternity wards are always packed. And I had to sleep out in the hall.
Oh.
Because there were no beds.
Yeah.
I mean, and then I go in to have Kurt, and I had my choice of rooms.
Really?
And there was no one there. And I said to the nurse, "What's going on?" And she said, "Well, you haven't heard about the pill." And I said, "Obviously not." But the pill had just come into effect.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
But we were thrilled. We were just thrilled to have all four of them.
Yeah. Do you have any particularly funny parenting stories from when your kids were little?
Oh, gosh. When Barb was high school, we were camping up at Estes Park, and Bill Bill got there early, and he set up the camper and the campground and stuff. And then I came up with the kids later, and of course, different car, and actually different license plate, different state license plate. And I couldn't figure out why the people in the campsite across from us were not looking at all the beautiful scenery and Long's Peak and everything. They would just sit there with their arms folded and look at us. And I thought, what's going on? Barb goes to the restroom, comes back chuckling to herself. And the people were from Nebraska across the way. They saw that Bill's car had a Nebraska license plate and mine had a Colorado license plate. And they're trying to figure out what county he's from because they are assuming he's having an affair with that woman. Barb's in the restroom and these women start questioning her and she can't figure out what they're getting at. And they said to her, do you know where that man visiting your mother is from? And Barb, she's ornery. She's as ornery as her dad.
Yeah.
And she said, I don't know. Because she's figured out what's going on.
Yeah.
So she comes back and I said, what's so funny? What happened in the restroom? She tells me. Bill's leaving the next day early. He had something come up at the office, which is typical, you know. And so I come out of the camper. He's loading his car. And I throw my arms around him and I lay a big one on him. And they're just sitting there, you know, yes. All eyes. And I walk back after he leaves. I walk back in the camper and Barb goes, mother. Just giving them something to talk about when they get home. I mean, that's terrible, isn't it?
No, that's hilarious.
And with Mike, he was in a high school. I let him play too much football. He played freshman, reserves, and varsity, you know. But he really enjoyed it and liked it. And I'm sitting in the stands, and some guy behind me said, boy, that kid's really good. What's his name? Well, one of his friends is sitting up there. And he said, that's Mike Mallory. And the guy said, oh, is that the coach's son? And he said, yeah. And he says, oh, well, then, of course, he's good. And, you know, I should have just let it pass.
Yeah.
And I said, his mother is a music teacher, and he can't play a lick on the piano. Give the kid credit for, you know, doing it himself. You know, ooh, 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 you know, like that. And I thought, I should not have said a word. But I did. And with Doug, when Doug was in high school, he had had braces, and he had just had them removed. Okay. He's playing, and he got hit in the mouth. Blood everywhere. And the fella that was sitting on my left was our family doctor. And I'm beside myself because all I can see is blood all over his face. I don't know what's happened to him. Mm-hmm. And my first thought is, if he has knocked his teeth out after all I have spent to straighten those teeth, I am really going to be angry. The guy said, I'm going down and see what's wrong. And he came back and he said, well, it's not his teeth, Ellie, but he's going to have one sore tongue. And he did. Oh, he really did. He had one sore tongue. But, you know, I laugh at that. He didn't think it was funny at all, but, well, he was. I'll tell a funny story on Kurt. Kurt, we lived in DeKalb, and wrestling was really big there, whereas the other kids, the other boys, did not wrestle, so they didn't know anything. Now he's younger than they are.
Yeah.
Mike is playing at Michigan. Doug is there in high school, and Doug comes down, and as you know, boys will wrestle around and stuff. And, yeah. And Doug grabbed Kurt, not knowing he had done pretty well in wrestling. He flipped Doug over. he had him tied up in knots and in the corner of the room. And I'm in the kitchen laughing because I thought, you got paid back, fella. You know? And Doug said, oh, I didn't know it was coming, you know, and all that business. Mike comes downstairs and Doug goes to Mike and he says, the young pup needs some straightening out. Now, Mike is playing football at Michigan and he goes over and he kind of grabs Kurt and he gets flipped over and he's all tied up in a knot. And I'm hysterical. I am laughing so hard. They said, it's not funny. We don't know those holes. And I said, oh, you two are such big football players. Oh, dear. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun.
So what lesson would you say that you stressed the most to your kids when they were growing up?
Boy, you know, you talk to your kids a lot and you say a lot to them. But, you know, I think they all learn most by what they see. They see you in situations and they see how you handle situations. So what did we stress? Oh, you know, be honorable, you know, do the right thing, help others. But I don't know that we actually said a whole lot.
Yeah.
I don't think we had to. We were fortunate. We just had good kids. Mm-hmm. You know.
And what would you say is the most rewarding part about being a parent?
Oh, there's such joy in seeing your children grow, mature, and succeed and be happy. They, all four of them, chose wonderful mates. And boy, that's a blessing. Yeah. And they have good kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What parenting advice would you give to parents nowadays?
You know, a lot of people ask that, and I always say, drive carpools and just drive. Keep your mouth shut and listen, because that's where you find out what's really going on. Because their friends will tell everything, they'll tease and carry on. Just sit there and drive and pretend you don't hear a thing. But I don't know. That's just being facetious. But there's so many things. I don't know what's the most important thing.
Yeah. What parenting advice would you give to a mom whose husband is in the coaching profession?
Oh, that's why we formed the Coaches Wives Association. Because most of us had no idea what we were getting into, and we talk a lot in our organization about moving, media, time away from home. But the thing about coaching is it's more than coaching. And you have to be so proud of your husband when he's a coach, because he's really, especially today, he's not just a coach. He's, in far too many cases, he's the father substitute. But it's a very rewarding profession. And I know I thoroughly enjoyed the work my husband did, and now that my sons are doing, because I know it's of value.
And what would the Ellie of today tell herself as a young wife and mother? So if you could go back and tell your young self something.
Relax. It'll work out. Yeah. Yeah. There were times we were moving and Bill had put, we just had three children at the time. Put me on a plane, and it was a breakfast flight.
Okay.
Barb was fine. She was like 5, Mike was 2, and Doug was an infant. And one of them had to go to the bathroom. And I'm feeding everybody and myself. And the stewardess said, I'll take him. He came back, and his pants were on backwards. Oh. There was nothing I could do till the plane everyone else on the plane deplaned. Then I could put him together, back together again. But it was, yeah, those are things you just have to go with it, you know.
I just laugh and move on.
Yeah.
So your husband was obviously a very successful football coach, coaching at various places. Could you go through the different places that he coached and the various time frames that you lived in each place?
Well, let's see. He started as a high school coach, head coach at East Palestine High School, right out of grad school. And they hired me sight unseen because they wanted him.
Yeah.
And it so upset my advisor at college. He did not want me going there. He had something else lined up for me. But anyway, I said, no, I'm getting married, and that's where we're going to go. But that he was there 1 year, and they had a great team, and they were undefeated. And then Bowling Green called and asked him to come, and he went to Bowling Green. We were there for 5 years, I think it was, 6 years at Bowling Green. He was defensive coordinator. And then we went to Yale. We were only there 1 year. Of course, I loved Yale. Oh. I mean, that's where all my family was, you know. Uh-huh. And, oh, it was one of my cousins was a milkman for me. Really? He was a student at Yale, and he was my milkman. I mean, and my aunts were just there all the time, you know, mm-hmm. to help with the children. It was just something that in coaching doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, you never go where coaches are or where family is. Mm-hmm. And then a man by the name of Woody Hayes at Ohio State called three times, and Bill was out recruiting, but he wouldn't leave his name. And he, fourth time he called, he said, okay, so I'll leave my name. Now, as you know, I have no trouble talking.
Yeah.
He said, my name is Woody Hayes, and I need to talk to your husband about a job. Silence.
Yeah.
And I'm saying to myself, for heaven's sakes, Ellie, speak.
Yeah.
And I said, please leave, give me your number and I'll have him call you right away. So we went to Ohio State. And from Ohio State, we had a great year. Went to the Rose Bowl and won. Mm-hmm. And the Miami job opened of Ohio. And I remember having the kid. I was pregnant with Kurt. And I remember seeing the media all talking to Bill in the other dining room. And I couldn't figure out what was going on because no one talked to the media except Coach Hayes. And I thought, uh-oh, what is going on? And he came over and he said, Bo Schembechler has just taken the Michigan job and they're speculating that I'd be a candidate for the Miami job. And he got the job. Mm-hmm. And it was very exciting, and that's where Kurt was born then. He was born in at Miami of Ohio. He was there for 5 years. Then we went to the University of Colorado, and that was what a glorious place to live. It was just beautiful. And our daughter, as a matter of fact, went to Colorado and got both her degrees from the University of Colorado. But it was a wonderful time. And then we went to Northern Illinois, up in DeKalb. And was that the people there were so warm and welcoming. We thoroughly enjoyed our time there. I had a championship, Mid-American championship there. And then Bob Knight, a fellow by the name of Bob Knight, called Bill. And when I told him it was Bob Knight on the phone, he said, oh, someone's pulling my leg, you know.
Yeah.
Why would a basketball coach be calling me, you know? And Bob said, are you interested in the job? And Bill said, well, I might be, yeah. And not really sure until Bob started talking. He knew who it really was, Bob. And he said, they're going to get a hold of you. And sure enough, we spent the rest of his career at Indiana and had a glorious time. This has been a wonderful place. not only to work and coach, but to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a beautiful place. We really loved it. So we've made the rounds.
Oh, yeah.
Not as many as a lot of folks, but we've made the rounds, had good times in all the places, and thoroughly enjoyed them.
Yeah. So how do you prepare to tell your kids when you are about to move again?
You know, I'm not so sure that they all didn't know what was going on. Because, you know, anytime you're being mentioned for a job, it's in the papers and news and, you know. So I think they all knew it was a possibility. They all, of course, were told right away when he had decided to take these jobs. Mm-hmm. And then how do you prepare for it? Well, I think the hardest one, well, I know the hardest one, was when we left Colorado and I had to leave our daughter there.
Yeah.
Because she was a student at the university there. And, you know, in the past, we all loaded up together and went. Mm-hmm. And so we had said our goodbyes the night before, and the moving van came. And don't you know, she came back. And I was pretty good until she came back. And she said, "This isn't right. I'm supposed to be leaving you. You're not supposed to be leaving me." I cried all the way to the junior high to pick up the other kids. I thought, oh my God, I made this. But the kids all did well. I think they all knew they were going to do all right. Mm-hmm. I thought for Mike, he was going to be a senior, and I was concerned about him because he was all state in Colorado. And I thought, oh boy, you know, we're going into a new community. But the coach there was wonderful. And I had to laugh. Someone said, well, he was so welcoming. I said, and he said, how many times do you get Mike and Doug Mallory at the same time? And with Kurt coming up, he said, of course he was nice to you. He was a great guy. Yeah, and they won, they lost the state championship game. But Mike had two other in Colorado. But
yeah.
They all did well. And when we moved to DeKalb, one of the neighbors was our banker. And he said, boy, the day you moved in, he said, my girls were up in the bedroom looking, because my kids are all playing basketball on the, you know, on the driveway.
Yeah.
And they were on the phone to all the other girls in town. And there's telling what each of them, and then the traffic started coming around. The boys never knew it. They just thought it was a busy street. Oh, it's funny.
How would you say constantly moving impacted your family's outlook on life, or what did it teach you all?
That there are good people everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's the primary thing. No matter where you are, you're going to find some wonderful, wonderful people. And of course, you're leaving some wonderful friends, but they're part of your group now. Mm-hmm. And then you meet others. In fact, we never had a bad move. They were all, when Bill took the Indiana job, a reporter called and said, now, what's the first thing you're going to do when you come to Bloomington? And you know, I didn't think. I just said, well, after we find a home and can get moved down there, we'll find a church home. Next morning, the secretary at the office called me and she said, do you know every minister in town has called to see when you're coming to town? She said, I haven't gotten a thing done except answering the phone with all these ministers. Oh, dear. I said, I'm sorry.
And would you say that you had a favorite place that you lived, and if so, why?
Boy, every place we've lived has had wonderful things happen. I don't know if I could pick one. Probably here, because we stayed here.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, as I know from my own family, the life of a football coach is pretty pressing. Constant travel during the off season due to recruiting, obviously stress during the season as they are hoping that they can keep their jobs. Many have heard from the perspective of the coach of how they deal with this type of pressure, but how did you as a coach's wife deal with this constant stress?
Fortunately, he won a lot of games. That helps the stress. I don't know. I'm sure there were times when I was upset about some things. You know, you get kids, sometimes you get kids injured, sometimes seriously injured. We had a young man have an aneurysm during a game. And you want to know stress. That was big time stress. But he survived. I still talk to him today. And he's done well, but his career, of course, was over. But he's gone on, got his doctorate, and his children are all well-educated, and so life's good. But those are the really bad things. That's not supposed to happen.
Yeah. What would you say is the main role of a coach's wife?
Support. And not just the coach, but the coaches' families, the players. There are times they need support too, and sometimes their parents need support. But I really enjoyed Bill's career. Mm-hmm. He had good people around him. He was so fortunate with his staffs, good people. You know, you want to be surrounded by good people because it makes life easier.
Yeah.
In fact, I was just wrote to someone who is the son of a fellow who coached for Bill. And he left and went into business and did very well. And I said, now it's too bad you didn't stay, because the other kids, and that young man played at Ohio State. I said, because the kids you would have been playing with as you grew up, one went to Michigan State, another went to Michigan. And there you were at Ohio State. You all would have had a wonderful time. and you do. You get close to their children, too. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a family operation. Mm-hmm. But it was a wonderful life. You know, we got to meet, and that's what I tell people. I got to meet some of the most interesting people, not only fans, but the parents of the players. They, everybody has a story. And I'll tell you one thing, I hadn't even thought about this, but we were going to a recruiting party, and Bill's telling me who he wanted me to sit with at the dinner. And he said, I know you'll get along real well. With it. Oh, by the way, she doesn't speak English. I beg your pardon. He said, oh, you'll figure something out. He said, you could talk to the wall. Fortunately, the father of one of our players was from the same country. And he came over. He said, Miss Mallory, I think you need some help. He turned to her and spoke to her in her language, and oh my gosh. And so he was the translator.
Yeah. That's hilarious. So I've been told that you served as an academic tutor for some of the players, as well as a babysitter when needed for the families. You even hosted recruiting breakfasts at your house. How did you handle all of this?
Oh, well, I loved it. Yeah, I loved it. I wouldn't have done it if I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I did stop the recruiting breakfast at our home. My reasoning, when we changed schools, my reason was I felt it took Saturday morning away from my children, because they couldn't do what other kids do Saturday morning, you know, because I'd have 40 people there for breakfast, you know, and I didn't think it was fair to them. Mm-hmm. But a team preseason party out at our house when we were out in Colorado. We had some acreage. We were out in the country, and the TV big dish came down the road, and they took pictures of it all, and the neighbors had no idea what was going on. But that was fun too. But I always enjoyed having people around.
Uh-huh. And given that three of your sons are football coaches currently, so therefore their wives are also coaches' wives, how do you say the role of a coach's wife has changed over the years?
Well, how has it changed? Well, I was just thinking, Kurt is the only one in college. The other two are in the pros. And I was over there for Easter, I think it was last year. And he discovered that he had a lot of kids who weren't going home. And we had food, but we had food for maybe 12 people, you know, just family. And he said he had told some of his kids, you know, I'll have plenty of food, come on out. And I said, how many? And I think it was 40 or something. I said, we need to go to the store. So I think it's still going on. The cars start coming down the street. But the other two are in the pros, and it's a little different. You're not entertaining in your home. Of course, the stress is still there. You know, you want to do well for all of them. But fortunately, they all have the good sense to marry wonderful women.
Mm-hmm. That helps for sure. What would you say was the hardest part about being a coach's wife?
The hardest part. Wow. You know, it's hard to think of the hardest part. I don't know. I guess moving was always exciting. I don't know. I can't think of, I know what other women have told me was the hardest, but I'm not sure I have a good answer for that. I think time. Time would be the hardest thing. They're busy. You know, coaches are very, very busy. And Bill many times would take, you know, if he was out recruiting, he'd have to take that late, late flight because one of the kids had something and he wanted to be there for it. Mm-hmm. You know, they have to make a lot of sacrifices. But as the wife, I think just not always having him. I remember a reporter asking me that question. She said something about children, and is it hard to raise children alone? And I remember struggling with that, you know. And finally I came up with, even though he's not at home every evening, like a lot of men are, fathers are, his presence is, that the kids always knew if he could be home, he would have been. And if he just absolutely couldn't, you know, but he would make sacrifices so that he could see a lot of what they were doing.
Yeah.
But the presence was always there, even though he wasn't.
And then what was your favorite part about this role of a coach's wife?
The people.
Yeah.
That, oh, golly. There were so many family members. There's one grandfather I just loved. He was just the greatest guy.
Yeah.
And he was a big influence on his son. And I've told his son this many times. I said, I just loved your grandfather. He was just the greatest guy. And the parents, you know, the thing about parents and a coach's wife and coach, you have the same interest. You want their son to succeed. You want him to be the best he can be. And so you have that in common.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get to meet so many. I mean, I got to meet Sandra Day O'Connor, a former Supreme Court justice. I tell you, and this shows you how ignorant I am. I should have known that there was Secret Service, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, she's Supreme Court justice. I should have known that. We're at a reception, and our athletic director's daughter had just passed the bar. Okay. And I said to Sandra Day O'Connor, I said, would you mind having your picture taken with a young woman who just passed the bar? Oh, love to. And then her parents want, you know, the athletic director and his wife wanted to be in the picture too. Okay. Yeah. So they're all lined up, four of them, but she's standing kind of separated from him.
Yeah.
And I just went over and put my arm on her hand on her arm to move her in a little bit.
Yeah.
Secret Service came out of the walls. I mean, and she just went, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. And I went, oh my gosh. I'm lucky the picture turned out. I was shaking so badly. Oh dear.
So definitely the people.
People, yeah. Great people. And people who, university people, trustees, fans, boosters, you know, they're people interested in other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good people.
So what does AFCWA mean to you?
Well, it means a place where coaches' wives can find other coaches' wives who understand her needs, job pressure, time requirements, moving, media, children, all of that. And she can learn from them. When we were starting this, we were hopeful. And after all these years, your group is still going.
And how are you involved at the beginning?
Well, at the beginning, I thought I was going to a very innocent coffee. And then we were going to do a little shopping. We were at convention and eat some Danish. And we started talking about coaches' wives, and we all knew people who were struggling. We all knew wives who were struggling with the business. And it had been tried before and did not succeed. But we really believed there was a need. And so we started talking about what we could do. Now, convention was just about over. And one woman said, well, why don't we get a room and a setup and some refreshments? And by word of mouth, let's see if we can get some people. 50 women showed up the next day. And they were so excited. Some of us spoke about what we would talk about. And it was sharing your husband with the world, raising children, getting fired, things like that we all still talk about. And we were very pleased that they were so excited. However, what they said was, you all organize it and we'll meet again next year in Nashville and we'll get going. And we all kind of looked at each other and said, okay. And so we did. So during the year, we would go to different meetings with our husbands and we would meet. Most of our husbands were on the board of trustees for the Coaches Association. I missed a meeting, so I got to write the bylaws. That's what happens when you miss a meeting. And anyway, in Nashville then, we gathered and they voted to accept the bylaws and we were off and running. They elected a board consisting of Danelle Taft, Pat Kane, Irma Hutchison, Redmond, Sue Keeling, Annette Hickson, Pat Edwards, Jackie Harbaugh, Carol James, Dorothy Faye McClendon, and me, Allie Mallory. So here we are aboard. We have no money. We have no mailing list. We have no nothing. We found a niche in the lobby of the hotel, and we decided who wanted to do what. And as I recall, no one wanted to be president, and I was appointed by my friends. And so that's how we got started.
That's a funny story. What year was that? Just out of my
87.
Own.
Okay. 87. Yeah. So it's been going for a while.
Yeah.
You know, after all these years, I went to one of their meetings years ago. Mm-hmm. And they're still talking about the same things.
Yeah.
You know, moving, it's the time commitment that their husbands have, the fans in the stands, the media, the criticism, you know, it's the same topics. Although they have added some things that I thought were great. One of them was they brought in a referee. And
really?
He told what the referees do during the game. And it was fascinating.
That's
interesting. I didn't know they had extra referees in the stands.
I didn't know that either.
I was like, what? Because, you know, you see them get injured, you know, knocked down.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that there was an extra in the stands.
Crazy. It was, I have no clue.
And they have some dangerous positions, too. You know, these guys are big.
Oh, yeah.
And they're right in the middle of it. Yeah. So it's been a fun organization. But the truth is, it was needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go into it when I was talking, but when we first started gathered, we were all talking about coaches who were leaving the profession because of their wives. And they were really good. You know, everybody was saying, he's such a good coach, but his wife can't take it. You know, she just can't take the time commitment and the criticism, mm-hmm. and the lack of privacy. And then one of the gals said, you know, years ago, they tried to start a support group for coaches' wives, and it never took off.
Yeah.
Coaches' wives used to go to, I went to my first convention in 1969.
Uh-huh. Where was that?
It was in New York City.
Ooh.
And the reason we went, Bill was coaching at Bowling Green, and they had won the small college national championship.
Uh-huh.
And none of us knew anything about it. You know, we didn't know what the convention was like, except they were going to get some award, you know, uh-huh. and we wanted to be there. And yeah. the husbands are going, well, wives don't go and all this. Well, they did, but they hid. And there, we found this is all what we found out. They hid from everyone else. They go out back doors. They wouldn't go through the lobby.
Oh.
And, you know, because the husbands didn't want their wives or other husbands to know that their wives were there.
Yeah.
In fact, I was waiting for some of the gals outside the lobby. And one of Bill's former coaches, John Pont, came in and said, Ellie, what are you doing here? You know, and I said, well, we all came. And he laughed and he looked at me and he says, don't you tell Sandy, his wife.
Yeah.
And I looked back at him and I said, next time I see her, I'm telling her. But then we found out that some of the wives would meet in their rooms,
yeah.
and play bridge and go do things and stuff, but they couldn't get an organization going.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, well, it's definitely needed, yeah.
It was needed. It wouldn't have, because we really did have no money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're starting a national organization. We have no money. We have no mailing list. And, you know, people I know in the school of business here are going, you did what? I said, well, we had their husbands' addresses.
Yeah.
And I just used that. I suppose it was illegal, but I did.
How did you raise the money then?
Dues.
Oh, okay.
And it paid for our, well, it didn't, because I asked Indiana University to print the newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol Novak was the editor. And they did it for nothing. But I had, you know, I had to do the postage, but
yeah.
that was all right. Yeah. And when Bill first went to Bowling Green, he came home one day and he said, I'm having dinner with a couple and their son.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think I have anything to talk to him about. Would you come? And of course, I loved it. And the head coach then thought that was a pretty good idea to bring the wife along. Yeah. And so that's how we got going. He said, why do you like this so much? And I said, it's like Rush.
Uh-huh.
Only I don't have that icky part.
Yeah.
And that's the selection. You guys have to select. Oh. I don't have to do that.
No.
But I can go and have a good time, talk to all these people, learned all about their lives and what they did.
Yeah.
He just laughed. He thought it was so funny. But it's true.
Oh,
it's Rush without, recruiting is Rush without the selection. The coach's wife would understand that. But I really did enjoy recruiting. because you meet people from all walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
One time I'd be having dinner with people who were known worldwide, you know, common names that most people would recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And the next night I'd be with someone who lived in Cabrini Greens. It was a tenement in Chicago for people who had nothing. And, you know, it's just, wow, you know, this is America.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk to people, different professions and jobs, and, you know, it was great. You know, just, you know, I used to tell Bill, I said, I have all the fun and you have all the work.
Yeah.
Hey, there's one thing I didn't tell you. When Bill was at Ohio State, he was working for Woody Hayes, and we were at a recruiting dinner. Uh-huh. And there had been an article in Cosmopolitan magazine about the divorce rate by professions. And Woody starts talking about it at dinner, and he said, and I can't figure this out. He said the highest divorce rate are among entertainers and physicians, and the lowest is among coaches and farmers. And he looked at me and he says, now, why do you think that is? And I, without hesitation, I say to Woody Hayes, well, in coaching, you don't get to see him long enough to get into an argument. And I see my husband sliding under the dining room table. And Woody looks at me and he says, by golly, I think you're right. Bill afterwards said, I can't believe you said that. I said, well, it's true. It's true. Oh, gosh. Funny. Times have changed.
All right. So transitioning now into your grandkids. How many grandkids do you have?
11.
11. Could you go through their names?
David, Mike, Scott, Catherine, William, Emily, Allie, Sarah, James, Sam, Margot.
Mm-hmm. And what was
And one great granddaughter.
Oh, what's her name?
Izzy.
Oh, how exciting. How old is she?
3. Just turned 3.
Oh, so exciting. What's your favorite part about being a grandma?
They make me laugh. And I have the freedom to laugh.
Yeah.
I know. There were times when some of the kids, you know, would misbehave a little bit.
Yeah.
And Bill would laugh. And my kids would go, boy, he would have yelled at me if I had done that. I said, it's funny now because you're dealing with it.
So how often do you see your grandkids?
Not often enough because we're all spread out.
Mm-hmm.
I have some in Florida and Atlanta, Denver, and then Terre Haute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So after living in so many different places, you obviously ended up deciding to stay in Bloomington. Why was this? Why did you choose to stay there?
I love it here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're such great people here.
Yeah.
And Bill never got to enjoy Bloomington, you know, we were going to some friend's house, and he said to me, how do we get there? I said, what do you mean? He said, I don't think I've ever been to their house. You know, that just amazed me, you know, that he knew how to get to the office. Church. And that was it. Gas station.
Yeah. So it's probably been fun for you with like IU success this year.
Oh, it's been fantastic. You know what I tell my friends, it is so good to see a good guy win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tom Allen's a good guy.
Oh yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, they're doing great this year. And didn't he have you be like a captain at the Michigan State game or?
Oh, yes. They wanted me to do the coin toss. Oh, my gosh. Oh, why did you bring that up? I think I've been asked twice to do the coin toss, and I said, I can't do that. If, you know, I'll get out there, I'll throw that coin up in the air, and we'll all be down on all fours looking for it. I just can't do that. I was here, I called my sons and asked them how to do it. You know, what do you do out there? And they were telling me, so they had me in the living room tossing it. Well, I'm hitting the ceiling. Don't throw it so high. Just flip it up. And I had no idea they were so involved. So I'd get out there, and the referee would hand it to me. I says, you do it. I just didn't want to embarrass myself by throwing it up in the air. Oh, my.
So then you and your husband would go to Florida for the winter, right?
Yes.
When did you start doing that?
Well, when Bill was finished coaching here, Bill's two brothers both had places down there, and they would winter there. And all those years, Bill's very close to his brothers. He didn't get to see them as often mm-hmm. as he would have liked. And I'm so glad we did that, because we got to spend more time with them. So that was good.
Yeah. This is kind of going back, but so your husband ended up being fired from IU.
Right.
How did your family take that? Obviously, I mean, you ended up staying in Bloomington. So like, what was that experience like? Because my family's experienced that as well.
I know you did.
Yeah.
I remember how angry my husband was. I kept him from going over there and making a fool out of himself. I'm sure your dad knew that. why did we stay? Because it's just a great place to live. Mm-hmm. You know, the artist series here, athletics, people come here just to take advantage of those things. Mm-hmm. And we already had such a nice group of friends here. I know other places called and said, come back, you know, come back here. Mm-hmm. We went, oh, we really like it here.
Yeah.
So we stayed, and it worked out. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then once he was retired, how did you spend retirement? Did you go on any vacations or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And boy, was that, it was like pulling teeth. Because he was just not used to being able to do things like that. My parents traveled a lot, so I liked to travel. So the university called and said, asked us if we would host a university trip on the Chesapeake Bay, and a boat trip. And all we had to do was host. Mm-hmm. I said, that really sounds like fun. I don't want to go on the Chesapeake Bay. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And I said, you know, other coaches have done this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh. And I said, Bo just did a trip to Italy with the Michigan people. He did. So we did. And that was the first. And that got it started. Then he saw how much fun it was. And you just have so much fun on these trips.
Yeah.
So we've had good times. Maybe my favorite was the Baltic. You know, we had a good time up in Alaska too.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just so many.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot to see and do. Oh, of course, right now.
I know.
We're a little limited. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad we did when we did.
Yeah, that's great that you had the opportunity to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Especially. Yeah. I mean, when he was coaching, it's nearly impossible to get to do stuff like that. So,
oh, no, no. Yeah,
that's awesome. So your husband unfortunately passed away 2 years ago. However, his legacy still lives on in major ways. Could you explain how you believe his legacy lives on in the greatest way?
In his family and his coaches and in his players. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. In fact, one of the coaches called. I had to chuckle. We have a grandson playing football at Miami of Florida, and he's a tight end. Mm-hmm. And one of the coaches called and said, I just hate this. He said, Bill would have loved to see a blocking tight end. And I just had to laugh, you know, because those are the people who see things, you know. Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah. And what would you say that your typical day looks like now?
Oh, well, you know, with this virus, I've really had to cut back. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really being good about, I always wore a mask when I was out and about, but, you know, I was out and about.
Mm-hmm.
And lately I've tried to stay quieter and get things done around here rather than going out and about. It's nothing to mess with.
Yeah.
And I've lost 2 friends and I don't want to lose any more. So
I'm sorry to hear that.
Trying to be careful, but life is still busy.
Mm-hmm. As you look back on your life, who are the people who have impacted you or influenced you the most?
Oh boy. Family, friends, and some teachers. Everyone influences you in some way. You know, a friend can just make a comment and it has power. Family, your children will say something and you think, ooh, that's really good insight. Yeah, that's right. You never stop growing, and people will say something in passing and it's, wow, means a lot. Yeah, we're all together in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we better know that.
I love that. What would you say is your favorite time period or memory of your life?
Whoa. Oh, there's so many. Yeah, I've been blessed. I have so many good memories. Such, you know, you as a woman, I think the birth of our children, you know, as a wife, I think finding the right spouse and how fortunate I was. And there have been so many people. I don't know that I can pick one.
That's a good problem to have.
Yes, yes, I've been blessed. Yeah, yeah. You just, I see some people who have had a lot of heartache, a lot of health problems, a lot of things, and life's been good.
Do you regret anything?
You know, I saw that on your list. I have been thinking since I got that list. Either I am a Pollyanna or I regret. Well, there's always little things you regret. You regret not spending more time with your children. You regret maybe missing something that was very important to them that you couldn't do. And, you know, but a big regret, no. I've tried. I've thought. I'm sure I've done some things that I've regretted. Maybe I've spoken too sharply to someone, or, you know, didn't hear their cry, you know. I don't know.
Again, another good problem to have. You can't think of anything.
Nothing jumps out.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to my generation?
Know what's right and do it. I was just talking to someone this morning who made a comment about younger people. And I thought, oh boy, that's harsh. That's harsh. You know, don't be so hard on them. They're young, you know. they'll grow. But you just have to know what's right and what's wrong. Yeah, and be your brother's keeper.
Mm-hmm. What do you believe is the most important thing in life?
Love. That's easy. That's easy. Yeah. I can't imagine living life and not saying I've loved so many people. Yeah.
Yeah. And then finally, what do you hope to be remembered by?
Other than my potato salad. I don't know. Maybe that she enjoyed life and enjoyed others. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've had a lot of good people in my life.
Mm-hmm. You've been blessed.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well,
It's been nice talking to you.
You as well. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. And good luck.
Thank you.
Oh, you'll do well. Oh, you're so good. Bye-bye.
Bye. Ellie Mallory, the woman who is all about the people, who thrives when she is busy, but puts her family and love above all else. The name Ellie means bright light, and for anyone who knows Ellie Mallory, you know that her name suits her well. For although she hopes to be remembered as someone who enjoyed life and the people around her, anyone who has come into contact with her over her 84 years on this earth can say that this goes both ways. For she truly is such a joy and a light to this world.
And I said, you know, my husband was one of the first coaches to allow women print reporters to come in for the press conference when he was at Colorado. Because they said the reason they couldn't have any women print reporters in the interview room was you had to go through the locker room to get there.
Wow.
That was what they said. And he said, I'll never forget it. He said, well, we can solve that because she was really good. She was a really good print reporter. And he said, we'll just wrap a towel around her head and the managers will lead her in. And bingo, she got in. One of my friends said, oh, I can't believe she's in the, you know, she has to go through the locker room. She just wants to see naked boys. I said, have you ever been in a locker room? I said, let me tell you something. One time I was standing outside the locker room waiting for Bill. It was pouring rain. And a manager came out and said, oh, Miss Mallory, come on in and stand here by the locker room. I said, not for $1 million. Have you ever smelled a locker room after a game? Oh, my God. I said to my friend, you have to be dedicated to go through there.